Will everyone in the Missouri Synod please rise for the prayer by our chaplain, followed by the Pledge of Allegiance.
And on our author it penned, deliberately dare to slow down your life when everything in you or around you is screaming rush. As yet another week is passing quickly and what is before us and lies ahead can be overwhelming, we call upon you, O God, to slow us down, to provide us a right and good perspective for what is truly important. Then in a deliberate way, help us make sure that each bill accomplishes what is helpful and needful. In your holy name we pray, amen.
Amen. I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all. Secretary, call the roll.
Senators Brown, Callahan, Chappelle Nadal, Crowell, Cunningham, Curls, Dempsey, Dixon, Engler, Goodman, Green, Justice, Keaveney, Kehoe, Kraus, Lager, Lamping, Lemke, Mayer, McKenna, Munslinger, Nieves, Parson, Pierce, Pergeson, Richard, Ridgway, Roop, Schaff, Schaefer, Schmidt, Stouffer, Wasson, Wright Jones.
Senator from Lawrence. A quorum is present. The Senate is in session. Read the journal.
Journal of the Senate, second regular session, 44th.
Senator from 23rd.
Thank you, Mr. President. I move further reading of the journal be dispensed with and the same be approved as so having been fully read.
You've heard the motion. As many as are of the opinion it shall prevail, say aye. Those to the contrary, no. The ayes appear to have it. The ayes do have it. Reading is dispensed with. Introduction of guests. Senator from the 11th.
Mr. President, I have guests. Mr. President, to the body's knowledge, we are very fortunate to have the exceptional honor of having members of the Independence Chamber of Commerce. The business community of my hometown is here. And they are also joined by a dear friend of mine, the wife of the county executive, Georgia Sanders, wife of Mike Sanders, Jackson County executive. And as you know, Mr. President, I've known Mike Sanders for almost 7 years. We've been friends for almost two of those. But anyway, Mr. President, I would ask that the body make these extraordinary guests feel welcome.
Will all the guests of the Senator from the 11th please rise for recognition by the Missouri Senate? The Senator from Christian.
Mr. President, to introduction of special guest. Mr. President, to your left and my right over here in the blue, if they'd stand up, I have the Billings High School 2A state champions. And I'm very honored that they came up to see us today. This is a very dedicated group of young men. They felt like they fell a little short last year. They decided to dedicate themselves this year. I don't think they lost focus all year. They wound up 29-3. They played in the state championship in Columbia just a few days ago and won it. And they are to be commended. They're a great group of young men. They've had a great season, and they've represented this state very well, and I would like to hear them welcomed. I will read their names, if you don't mind, very quickly. Connor Jenich, Caleb Harder, Nathan Blades, Austin Essick, Brady Chastain, Chad Yoakum, Seth Hagerman, Sawyer Hawkins, Dawson Meyer, Lane Truman, Kyle Kimberling is the manager, Justy Powers manager, Kendall Tilley, their head coach. Jeff Mitchell, assistant coach, Roger Kavanagh, principal. Please welcome
Senator,
them today.
Senator, you did not say, but we're left to assume they are they're playing the sport of basketball. Is that correct?
Yes, sir.
Let's all give a big welcome to the state champs from Billings. Fine-looking group of young athletes. Senator from Lewis.
Thank you, Mr. President. I have some very distinguished guests here today. Today with us in the chamber, in the Senate chamber, we have some bankers from Paris National Bank. We've got Dan Putra, Mary Dickey, and Chuck Brazeal over here on to my right and to your left, Mr.
Let's
President.
Let's give a special welcome to the guests of the Senator from Lewis here in the Missouri Senate today. Senator from Phelps.
A very special guest, Mr. President. On my right and your left, I have David Connell and Bob Wilson representing Phelps County Bank from Rolla and St. James. Is an employee-owned bank. I think the only one in the state of Missouri. Truly a home-owned bank trying to put money back in the community if the federal government will stay out of our way. Thank you. Make them welcome.
Let's welcome these guests of the Senator from Phelps. Senator from Cole.
Thank you, Mr. President. I have the introduction of some very special guests. To my left and to your right, Mr. President, it gives me great pleasure to introduce Mrs. Fran Joy. She is a longtime leader in the Cole County community and a pioneer in medication-assisted treatment of addictions with more than 50 years of service. She has served as program director, registered nurse, and certified counselor at Preferred Family Health Center here in Jefferson City. She's accompanied by Corey Putz, vice president of Preferred Family Health, Ann Hutton, Una Bennett, Stacy Hudson, and Brandon Ferris. These folks will be joining me to present Ms. Joy with this resolution honoring her service in just a few moments. Please help me make Fran and her colleagues feel welcome this morning.
Let's welcome this special guest and the special guests of the Senator from Cole to the Missouri Senate. Introductions, petitions, memorials, remonstrances, resolutions, concurrent resolutions. Senator from 23rd.
Thank you, Mr. President. Without objection, the Senate will go to the order of business of Senate Bills for Perfection, the informal calendar, Senate Bill 439.
Senate Bills for Perfection, the informal calendar, Senate Bill 439. The Senator from Stoddard.
Thank you, Mr. President. I move that Senate Bill 439 with Senate Committee substitute come before the body for perfection.
You've heard the motion. As many as are of the opinion it shall prevail, say aye.
Aye.
Those to the contrary, no. The ayes appear to have it. The ayes do have it. The bill is before the body, Senator.
Thank you, Mr. President. I move for the adoption of the Senate Committee substitute. This is the piece of legislation that we've been working on this session that deals with reforming the prevailing wage law here in Missouri. The first component of this legislation will exempt public work projects necessitated by natural disaster in any county that's under a federal disaster declaration and that receives federal disaster assistance. As most of you know, in the year 2011, Missouri received five federal natural disaster designations covering severe winter storms, flooding, and tornadoes, and communities were tasked with rebuilding a great amount of public infrastructure on a very limited amount of resources following these disasters. And so these communities and these regions need the flexibility to do so quickly, efficiently, and to do so with not being burdened down by excessive regulation. Exemptions for disaster-stricken areas, in my opinion, is not just good public policy, but it's good public common sense. So what happens in the piece of legislation, as I mentioned, in these areas, the prevailing wage law is waived. The second thing that is done in this piece of legislation is that we revise the definition of construction. Many of you are probably aware of a project that took place in Monroe County in the northeastern part of Missouri where the community was actually doing some maintenance work on a water tower, actually cleaning that up and repainting that water tower. And in the past, those types of projects have been maintenance projects. They haven't fit under the definition of construction, and so they have been exempted from the prevailing wage law. But the courts last year have expanded where the prevailing wage law has to be put in place, and they've expanded it for a lot of these maintenance projects. And so this bill simply revises the definition of construction and places it where it had been interpreted prior to last year. Also in the bill, we also have revised how we determine what the prevailing wage is going to be for the different 26 job classifications throughout the state of Missouri. And instead of using the mode method of statistical analysis, instead we have gone to the Bureau of Labor Statistics wage scales. The Bureau of Labor Statistics, of course, is a federal department that does surveys throughout the year all over the state of Missouri and actually all over the country, and they determine what the wage scales are, the average scales are in any particular county or region. And so instead of going through the calculations and the process that now is in place at the Department of Labor, we now implement through this bill the wage scales by taking a look and implementing the Bureau of Labor Statistics wage scales. Another thing in the bill, we revise the process by which alleged violations by contractors are processed. We change that slightly. And one thing that we have been talking about among the working group that I've been working with, the senator from the 13th, the senator from the 11th, and the senator from Phelps have been working together, trying to work together to see if we can make revisions and make compromises that will benefit this area of the law, is that we're seeing that many of the contractors throughout the state are not submitting wages. About 70% of the time, in 70% of the counties, there are no wages that are actually submitted by the contractors to the Department of Labor. And so that has caused a lot of consternation among the working group, and they feel like that's a problem. And it on the surface does seem to be a problem, but I had the opportunity last week to go over to the Department of Labor, and I don't know if it's in the packet that I sent out to you, but I found some very interesting documentation and correspondence between the department and different union labor entities. And it, you know, after looking over several pieces of these documents, it seems to me that the department and the different labor groups actually are in collusion. We're seeing that when you look at the documents from the department sent out to different labor groups, that the department is saying, hey, listen, we have open shop contractors, non-union contractors, who are setting the prevailing wage rate in this particular county. Can you give me wages? And then there's correspondence coming back from the union saying, yeah, okay, how many hours do you need? What county do you need the hours in? You know? And that's not the way that department was set up to function, and certainly not the way the prevailing wage law was to be set in Missouri. I know that there's a letter here that I've got that is sent to one of the department's employees and says, see the attached for a preliminary report of prevailing wage hours in some of the counties under the jurisdiction of local number 396. As you will see, I've not been able to find hours for all the counties that fall under our jurisdiction, but I'm still making phone calls to our signatory contractors to try and come up with hours in the counties that I've not included in this preliminary report. There is a email sent back that talks about Hal and Mary's County being open shop. In other words, the department writes back to local 636 or 396 and says, hey, listen, The open shop contractor has set the prevailing wage in this county. You need to get us ours, Local 396, and make certain that this is not the case, that the open shop contractor is not setting the wage. And that went on back earlier this year, in January of this year. Another piece of correspondence in the way of an email from the department to one of the local labor unions talks about the fact that she's telling them that they need to beat the hours that have been submitted by an open shop contractor. And the union person says something to the effect, I understand that there's 14,000 building hours turned in Pettis County. If you can give me any information on the contractor or location of that project, I would very much appreciate it. Gabe Jones from the local union asked that of the department. And so she responds and gives hours for Benton County, Pettis County, Saline County. But not only does that, she actually provides the name of the construction firm and where it's located. And so there's correspondence throughout. I've got probably 10 or 11 of these different correspondences between the department and the different local labor unions in collusion setting the prevailing wage for these different job classifications throughout the state. And it's no wonder that our contractors don't want to submit hours. I mean, why submit them when you've got a department here of the state government working with another entity to make certain that the open shop contractors' wages that they submit are not being used, or worse yet, they're being trumpeted by another entity? So, you know, I believe sincerely that is the reason why most of the counties in this state do not submit wages. The contractors say, hey, there's no need. The department is working in collusion with the unions, and it's a fruitless and waste of time to submit out. And that's why we need to revise and reform the prevailing wage law. It doesn't accurately reflect the wages for the counties, especially in outstate Missouri. And as we all know, the state of Missouri has a limited amount of resources. So do local governments and entities and county governments. They can't afford to pay two and three times the labor rates in their counties on public works projects. And with that, Mr. President, I renew my motion, and I am open for questions.
We are on Senate Bill 439 of the senator from Stoddard. Does any senator wish to be heard? Senator from the 13th.
To inquire.
Senator from Stoddard, do you yield?
Certainly.
He does. Proceed.
You used a pretty powerful word in collusion. I'm going to be interrupted.
Three senators on the floor. Senator from the 15th, what does he rise?
Ask for unanimous consent to introduce some special guests.
Seeing no objection, proceed.
Thank you, and I want to thank the senator from the 13th. I wanted to make sure I introduced these nice people before we got into the substance of this debate. Here with us today on my right and on your left, Mr. President, are the pachyderms. We have Holly Littner here, Scott Clark, Ron Mark, Janine Stewart, Tom Wilsden, Bob Gupp, and Matt Elin are here, and I would ask the Senate make them feel welcome and ask that the honorary pages be made of Helen, Barb, and Marshall Foss, that they be made pages for the day, and have my colleagues welcome the pageant.
They shall be made pages for the day. Would the guests in the Senate of the 15th please ride, and would the Missouri State Senate please make them feel welcome. Senator from the 13th.
To continue my inquiry.
Proceed.
You talked about the word collusion, Senator.
Yeah.
You know what that means, don't you? Collusion?
Yes, Senator, I do know what it means.
Okay.
What I'm asking about is, yes, I see your emails contacting. Is there anybody else that's contacted the department and received information on the submission of ours?
In the files that I examined, I didn't see it, no.
No other contractor?
I saw no other contractor.
HTH never submitted information requesting what hours had been turned in which counties?
In the file that I examined, there was nothing there. The only correspondence that took place between the department and other entities was correspondence between the department and union entities,
okay,
organizations.
Been, and I'm looking through my file here, but there's also been correspondence between HTH and the department finding out the same information, contacting the state bureaucracy, and checking out the same information.
Apparently they did not. I didn't see it in the file, Senator.
Well, I'm looking through the file, and if anybody in my office hears me on that one, that's what I'm looking for now. But I have your handout, and I'm going to get that information to correspond with your handout. But the idea of contacting a bureaucracy for information, it happens all throughout state government, doesn't it?
Oh, yeah. I'm not being critical of that. I'm just saying that why would an employee of the Department of Labor, where an open shop contractor has the hours and no one has contacted him or her, make the effort to actually go and contact that particular union entity? Why would they do that when they haven't been approached?
Well, I think it's just like anything else. We have the Department of Revenue that sells information to private vendors. I think it's a matter of contacting and finding out information. And throughout this inquiry, I'm going to find that so that I can show you that there was an inquiry made by HTH contractors, which is above board and legal, about the submission of hours.
Well, I'm not saying that there's any illegality going on, Senator.
Okay, well, you use that word, collusion. And
well, collusion, you know, is a definition that says a secret agreement between two or more persons for a fraudulent or deceitful purpose.
Well,
that doesn't mean that it's illegal.
It's public information. Deceitful would be trying to hide it. It's public information that when you went over and inquired about it, they provided it to you. It wasn't no big secret.
Yeah, but I'm saying, Senator, there were instances where the department had not been contacted and saw that the open shop contractor had set the wages, and so they made the effort to contact the union and say, hey, listen, the open shop contractor has the prevailing wage here. You need to get hours submitted in, or you need to go out and find hours. Why should the Department of Labor be doing the work of a particular entity?
Well, from the documents you submitted to the desk, it's people inquiring in a state government bureaucracy responding to that inquiry. But on that same issue, you were talking about 70% of the contracts or 70% of the wage rates set are because no hours have been submitted. So what we're talking about is the 30% that have been submitted with your emails. But we still have that issue of the 70% of the wage rates. Nobody's submitting wage rates.
Yeah, I mean, why would you want to? Because when you submit it, the department's going to get a hold of the local union and make certain that somehow they come up with the hours and submit them. So, I mean, why
Senator,
take the
Well, you and I can disagree on that, but I have a list here of email addresses of all the contractors that they have corresponded to over the years, and they email them every year soliciting wage rates. And they're not all union contractors. They're non-signatory contractors as well. The list is long of contractors, individuals. I mean, one of the people on the list is the ABC. Another person on the list is the State Chamber of Commerce. They submit to try to get their members to submit back the hours and the wage information. I have a long list that I'm sure I will.
They also have correspondence from the department that said, hey, listen, ABC, the union has set the prevailing wage in this county. You need to try to find more hours to overcome that.
What I'm trying to say is once I get the correspondence that I'm looking for, it has happened with HTH contractors filed for this information, and they received it too.
Well, they should receive it.
I know. And
I don't have a hang-up with that, but what I'm saying,
when anybody picks up the phone and calls a governmental entity and wants information, and there's nothing secretive about the information, you supply the information. So I'm just trying to clarify.
No, I agree with you, Senator. Let me help you understand what I don't think is right, is that I think it's fine, and I'm not saying the department hasn't sent out correspondence to all contractors, non-union and union. I'm just saying that I bet you won't find any correspondence where the union has set the prevailing wage and the department has contacted an open shop contractor and said, hey, listen, the union has set the wage. I just want to make you aware of that so that if you've got more hours, you need to submit it. Because if you don't, the union contractor is going to set the wage in that county. I bet you can't find any correspondence of that nature.
I'm sitting here, and I also had my staff do some research as well on how they try to encourage, entice all contractors to submit wage information. You go on their website now and you click, and it gives you a little printout, and it's even, I think with their PR people, a live video telling them this is how you go about submitting the wage rates. So I guess where I'm going with my inquiry on this issue is there is a continual effort to try to get more people to submit wage rates. And there have been contractors that are non-signatory who have submitted wage rates, and their wage rates have prevailed. So if you submit, and it only takes 1 hour to submit of a construction wage rate on an occupational title, 1 hour to determine a wage rate. And 70% is no one is turning in or submitting those
hours.
And
I'm saying they're not.
You're saying is the reason between is you feel they will be contacted once the wage rates have been submitted. What I'm saying is those who have submitted wage rates in the same contractor that requested this information from the department also has submitted the wage rates, and his wage rates have prevailed, have they not?
Occasionally, perhaps.
Yes, his wage rates have prevailed, not in the urban areas, because the majority of the work that we're talking about on this contractor is in rural Missouri, but their wage rates have prevailed. So I'm just trying to bring out that argument. I see your handout. I understand it. We will disagree on this point specifically, but soliciting information from the state, from a state bureaucrat, I hope we never deter a state bureaucrat from responding to an
inquiry. No, and I don't want to do that, Senator. And what I'm pointing out, and I guess I'm not explaining it to you very clearly, I think that the department, I'm fine with them having communications, but I mean, is it their job to urge or encourage after they see that an open shop contractor is setting the wage? Is it the department's responsibility to call your union and say, hey, Senator Green, you're the open shop contractor setting the wage here. Senator Green, you need to get some hours in or come up with some hours.
Senator Stoddard, we'll refrain from using other senators' names.
The senator from the 13th, do you need to get some hours together and submit them to the department? Is that really the department's function? And I mean, as an open shop contractor, Senator from the 13th, what would you think if you knew this kind of communication was going on with the department and the union contractor?
Well, I always believe government should be accessible.
Oh, I agree.
Okay? And that's what I see transpired in your handouts. You feel that there is a further relation. Well, I'm sure there's relationships, in all fairness, with certain people in the Department of Revenue and people that transfer titles all the time. Am I correct here? There's probably
And I'm not saying it's illegal.
Yes.
I'm just saying that as an open shop contractor, why would I want to participate in this kind of activity when I knew this was going on,
okay,
where the department was working with the different unions to make certain that they set the wage scale?
I grasp what you're trying to say, but I'm trying to bring in other departments to compare what you're saying. I'm sure there's times, and I know I have a municipality that has contacted the Department of Revenue and said, we think the tax collections you have made are unfair, that the department owes us more for some of those municipal sales tax collections. And the reason I'm bringing that up, because I handled the inquiry for my city, and the correspondence went back and forth between the state bureaucrat in the city. So there was no collusion, but there was a relationship that was created getting that information. So I'm just trying to bring to point, and we have both stated our points on this issue so far, that I do not see anything wrong getting the information. There is still 70% that we, that's one thing you and I agree on, there is 70% of the wage rates that are set by collective bargaining agreements because no hours are turned in. And my premise throughout the day is trying to get more contractors to participate in the process. Your argument is they don't feel they should participate because there's a relationship from a state bureaucrat to a labor official of finding information, abiding by the law, and submitting that information. You and I are not going to agree on the mindset of why or why not, why or why contractors do not submit wage rates. I'm just bringing my side and my point to you on that issue.
I'm just saying that as an open contractor, I would feel like there would be an unfairness in how the department operates with the unions. And I don't think that as an open shop contractor, I think, well, why do I want to submit these records and go through all this knowing that at the end of the day, the department's going to continue to contact the local and say,
well,
hey, you're not setting the
law. You and I, like I said, are going to continue. I applaud a bureaucracy working with a citizen or a tax-paying entity for working to operate their business. So
all I'm saying
you
is
and I are going to
disagree. Treat both sides the same way, Senator.
Yes, and I'm going to get you that email if I can have my office. I know it's in my box here, but I can't locate it, from a contractor that has done the same thing that for HTH, and they have asked for that information, and the department has submitted that information. So I'm going to supply that information to you, but I want to say maybe it's just one contractor that is submitting hours that wanted this information, but it's just not one segment that's doing it. It's other segments, and there's really, to me, no big deal of supplying information because we're always dealing with the issue of the Sunshine Law on this Missouri
Senate
floor.
I just ask that they do it fairly, that they treat
both sides.
I think they do it fairly.
You do not. But the issue, and my last statement on this, is the issue is 70% of the wage rates are determined because no hours have been submitted. I still think submitting 1 hour in that area are requiring contractors that participate in bid on public works projects to be required to submit wage rates. Now, you and I, and there have been people who have talked to me, you have set up several meetings. Has labor been invited to any of those meetings? At my request, I did not want them to participate. So it's not you excluding, but when we talked about who we should include in the meetings, my argument, which you went along with, was bring the industry in and keep the issue of union versus non-union out of it. So when we had our first meeting, it was a set of contractors and contractor associations. I'm not trying to lead you on. I'm just trying to be sincere.
No, I mean, you've summarized it properly.
And in that first meeting we had, which was about 3 hours, we let these different construction entities air everything out. And there were contractors there, some that did submit hours, but there were most of the contractors in that room were frustrated with us even dealing with this issue and saying what we need to do, and I think it was the gentleman from the Electrical Contractor Association of St. Louis, what we need to do is just like when you do job specs. Some of these job specs now require the employees to have some OSHA training so that there's safety on the job site. They have to abide by these job specs. Why can't you list in that spec to bid on this job, show us that you have submitted some data to help determine the Division of Labor Standards wage rates? Fair enough. You submit the information of how much you're going to pay your employees once you get that job. Why can't you submit that information, some of the information? You don't even have to submit all your records. Just submit some of that information that you're going to have to supply once you're building the project to the Department of Labor to set the wage rates. What's so hard about that in creating more and more?
Well,
that's one of the things that one of the contractors
came up with. You know, when we talk about contractors not submitting hours in all these different counties, there's a reason for that. You know what I'm saying?
Well, now, I don't agree with your reason. And why I wanted all the industry in is you had industry people, other contractors. And in that one meeting, several contractors got a little heated with each other describing the differences they have in their industry. Just like when we sit down, and I always use the analogy of when we had the cable TV, AT&T or Southwestern Bell, it was an industry issue. And you put the industries, or when we're dealing with power plants and users of the power plants, you get them in rooms. And it's the industry that talks about it. And we had the industry in there, and a majority of the industry was sitting there. Just so that my staff knows, I know it's in my thing, but I'm talking so I can't locate that. So if you could send that information up, I would appreciate it. But as the contractor groups were talking, and you had the builders from the Kansas City AGC, you had several associations from the St. Louis, several from the state AGC, all sitting there saying the submission of hours and enticing the submission of hours to determine the wage rates is probably the best way to make sure this works. And you had states, and you did a nice handout, or a nice flyer, I guess you can say, of all the states that have prevailing wage, so it doesn't look like we're the only state that does it. A lot of those states do it through the mode method and not the average method throughout. I have a file that I'll get to that portion in a little bit, but we have to get to a point in time, and if staff would start working on an amendment, that would, if you bid on a construction project in the state of Missouri, one of the things you have to show is that you have submitted wage rates. It can be 1 hour, it can be your entire year, but requires that you submit wage rates to the Department of Labor Standards so that a wage rate can be set. So if they can start working on that amendment, that's probably an amendment that I'm going to bring forth.
Yeah, I just got another little piece of correspondence. There was a lady, I guess from one of the locals, that wrote to the department, attached to the hours for December 2011. As in the previous email I sent, we're still getting in late hours. When will the preliminary report be done? Sorry to be a pain. I guess I just got really spoiled when Jim was there. Response, there's no preliminary report. If hours will make an impact, this is from the department, there's no preliminary report. If hours will make an impact, we'll do everything to get the hours entered. Response, I just remember getting a call if we needed hours in the outer counties before the final report was done. Response from the department, if you want, you can send me a list of the counties that you want checked. Then the area two counties are the ones that we worry about the most, Green and Pettus. That is the ongoing correspondence.
Yeah, and you and I are going to disagree because I think nothing wrong has been done. A taxpayer has contacted a bureaucracy for information. And eventually during this dissertation, I'm going to find through all this research my staff has done that correspondence so we can get off that issue so that you know other people have asked for that and found that information.
Yeah, I just mean in that correspondence, the government agency contacted the local entity.
Yeah, because the local entity contacted
them
first.
You know, to make sure that
first, so.
They got the hours in so that they'd be sure and set the prevailing wage.
Yeah.
I don't know why it's the department's responsibility to make sure that
I think whoever, what it is, to be quite
the,
honest, is
hours,
I think it's a...
Gets the hours submitted.
Yeah, I think it's a just a state worker responding and trying to have a good personal feedback relationship. I don't think it's more than government trying to work for those
who
are interested.
You don't think that the person within the department is trying to lend assistance to one side at the disadvantage of another one?
No, but... No, I do not, but let's make sure we do not deter state workers from assisting people that make inquiries.
Oh, I don't want to. I don't want to. All I'm saying is let's
that.
Treat everybody with the same respect and with the same assistance. That's all I'm saying, Senator. Why should one group get a greater amount of assistance and another group be ignored?
Yeah,
why can't we treat everybody alike?
Well,
why can't we be fair to all the contractors and all the workers? Why? I don't understand why the government, who's functioning with taxpayer dollars from all the citizens of Missouri, why shouldn't they all be treated the same?
Yeah, in here, this is from 2007, but there's also one from 2012, if my office is listening. But the one from 2007 is... a letter from a Mr. Gregory Holbrock with HTH, and that letter says, attention, Mr. Beckman, I believe he's was the deputy director that has now retired, but gentlemen, please provide to HTH copies of backup analysis information utilized in determining wage rate classification, insulator asbestos worker for wage order to be published in March 2007. Now, that means the letter is coming to the department February 22nd of 2007, and the wage order is published March. So basically, 7 days before the end of the month, he lists right now probably 21, 22 counties. He would like the information the department has that is going to set these wage rates. And basically, this is a letter in response requesting backup copies. Accordingly, enclosed, please, you will find copies of information requested. So that was sent back to him about the information. So there's not a conspiracy.
Yes. He actually requested it.
Yes.
I'm saying there's instances where the department is actually sending correspondence where they haven't been requested of it.
Well, I think it's
and that's good.
It's request. Oh, it's great. Public access.
If you want to do that,
public
offer
access.
An amendment that says that all contractors get the same information or the same correspondence.
They can. That shows you all they have to do is write a letter. Now, I'm working on an amendment that what we do is require them to submit wage information. If you'd be amenable to that amendment, plus if you want to add an amendment that states they have to respond to an inquiry from the department to make it more clear, that's fine too. Do you want a department, if somebody's not requesting the information, to supply it automatically?
Senator,
we can do that too, but
I'll
need your help in the budget process
in the
to get the funding
That. I want a more fair and accurate reflection of what the wages are in every county, and the mode statistical method of analysis is not the right method to use.
You and I just had different features.
I think we got to get away from this mode
in
method.
In high school and college,
because
I'm fine with mode and you want average.
Well, I mean, but you think about it, Senator. So somebody submits 100 hours at $20 an hour, and then we've got 300 hours at all different amounts of hours with a lesser amount of wage, and yet that one rate of pay that has the most hours is going to prevail. All the rest of it's just thrown out. Well, I just don't think.
Well, let's talk about that if you want to. Now that I've been able to get you the
inquiry,
now that I gave you the information that other people have inquired about that information.
Oh, and I never, hey, Senator, I never did say that anybody else hadn't inquired. All I'm saying is that the department, after in a lot of instances,
I know, but
wasn't
what I
even
did
approached,
is I was,
Senator.
Right.
They weren't even approached, and yet they've made the effort to contact what it looks to me like mostly local union entities and say, hey, listen, an open shop contractor is setting the prevailing wage. You better get hours in or they're going to set the wage.
And that is.
And I don't see where that happened in any other instances involving someone other than unions.
Well, you and I differ, but that is no different from a gentleman that is not a signatory contractor contacting in the department.
Yeah, he contacted them, Senator.
Yeah, and your letter shows, in your handout shows me all of
the communication is what I'm saying.
Yeah, but your handout also shows that there was communications of them individuals inquiring as well.
And the reason why I brought it up is because we're concerned that contractors don't submit hours, and that's the reason why. Why would you? You know what I'm saying? Why would you when you know you got the department working against you to make certain that your hours aren't the ones that set the wage?
You and I are going to continue to disagree, but basically, the department is responding to inquiries, and there are individuals that are participating in the process.
Sometimes
let's
they are responding to inquiries, and sometimes they are on their own taking the initiative to contact
let's
the
not
union
make this
entities
an issue
without
of,
being prompted to do so.
How we make it more, how we continually try to pass legislation to make it more difficult for people to vote. Let's not continue down that path and make it more difficult for people to participate in this process. We're not getting enough participation.
I just want to make sure that they're treated fairly and with the same approach that other people are treated with, and that the hours that they submit are used and not thrown out. Let's get a fair and accurate reflection of what the wages are in all these counties.
Hours were thrown out.
We have a limited amount of resources, and when we start paying three times the labor rates that are actually being paid in a county, you know, counties or municipalities can't build buildings.
Well, the wage rates is another thing.
You
talked earlier about disaster area being part of your legislation.
Waving.
Well, there's large contractors from the St. Louis metropolitan area that are now down in Joplin doing the work on the hospital. And those wage rates that they're paying are the collective bargaining wage rates. So when they submit those hours down in Jasper County, those wage rates are going to be the ones that prevail.
Sure. And you know
and
what,
Senator, the ones that are going to
the prevailing wage is just the minimum amount of pay that is to be paid. That's just a minimum in construction work.
Can you tell me the contractors that pay the maximum? Because when I get done with this, I'll go work for them. Because the prevailing wage is the minimum, and when I worked with the tools, let me tell you, well, I did get a bump in pay when I ran work, but I'm always willing to go to somebody that wants to pay.
So you don't buy into that's the minimum wage on construction jobs?
Prevailing wage? No, I think that's great. I think we set the minimum wage, and you continue to rise it. I don't want the prevailing wage to be the minimum wage, but the prevailing wage is the minimum.
It's the minimum
of the
construction type of jobs.
Yeah, and you can go higher. Because, Senator, you and I both know when people are working and people are making money, that means there's more revenue coming into the state for income tax.
You're right.
And when people make more money and after they pay their bills, they have purchasing power.
Yes.
That means we're going to get revenues to help state operate with sales tax.
I appreciate you helping me. Because I'm saying that if we would get a labor rate that more accurately reflects the actual wage rate being paid in counties, we'd see a lot more of these public work projects actually being undertaken. Right now, people say, you know, it's just like down in Joplin. They can build two more schools
if
we had a more accurate reflection of what the wage rate is there.
I keep hearing that, and I'm going to inquire the senator from Jasper, because there has been some issues that have been going on the school construction down in Joplin. I believe you were in the meeting, one of the meetings we had down in, I think, your old committee room where the Department of Labor came and said how they had been down helping
and I appreciate
the school
that, and we all do.
In Jasper, because here's what was happening, and I'm trying to get more having my staff research more information on that. But so everyone knows, when you bid a public works project, it is in state law that you have to go with the lowest and the best. Do we define best in our state statutes, Senator?
I hope not.
No, we don't.
I hope we don't.
So a municipal government, a school district, required by the state government, has to go with the lowest bid. And I guess best is in the eyes of the beholder.
Well, I think
they look
best
at the dictionary.
Can be determined by the local entity who's hiring the workers.
Here's what happened down in
they
Joplin.
They should be the ones to determine if a particular contractor or employees or workers will provide the quality of work that they desire. That should be their decision.
Okay, here's what happened in Joplin just recently. 2 or 3 weeks ago, a contractor that was awarded the job was from Georgia. Not from Joplin, but from Georgia. Now, the reason that contractor was awarded that job is because they were the lowest bidder. So all of a sudden, the school district, I have a few of those emails somewhere in this box too, the school district started contacting the department. The department literally went down and set up shop and helped them figure out how they have to go about making sure these contractors are paying all the taxes, work comp, and unemployment benefits that that contractor from Joplin pays their employees that was beat out on cost on the job. So the local contractor lost to a Georgia contractor. You know what else they had a problem with, Senator, that was explained to us? I think they had a problem locating the Social Security numbers. It was stated when we were down there. There were some Spanish names with Social Security numbers that weren't matching those Spanish names. So this contractor from Georgia may have had, or still investigation, possibly some illegals on it, not paying the right taxes, so the Department of Labor went down there and helped them, and the school district has thanked them. And guess what? I don't think that Georgia contractor is going to get any more work, and I think there's going to be some local Jasper County contractors that who might not be the lowest, but they might be able to say to the Georgia contractor, you're not getting any more work.
You know, Senator,
so
I would hope that a school district, meaning their administrators and the people on the school board who run that, would check a contractor to see what kind of practices they've actually been doing in other jobs.
Well, when you don't do a lot of construction and all of a sudden your entire community's wiped out, you go from being a school administrator to a project manager. And a lot of these superintendents at times aren't overly familiar with being a project manager.
Well, I mean, when you're dealing with a project of that nature, if you're not I'm not being critical. I'm just saying that I don't think that school district necessarily was forced to select that Georgia contractor because they were the lowest bid. I believe there's mechanisms within the law and within the contract to allow them not to give a contract to a contractor who can't do the work, that the quality of work doesn't meet the standards that they need. And certainly they're not forced to hire a contractor who violates the law, whether it's dealing with illegal aliens or whether it's not paying Social Security or whatever. A school district is not forced to continue to employ that kind of contractor, or you know, they have the right, the option, not to select that particular contractor.
And the senator from Jasper's here, but let me get this update that I received, and let me read it so I get it all accurate.
I guess I'm asking you, what's that got to do with the bill here?
Well, I'm trying to tell you, first and foremost, that in state laws, public entities have to go with the lowest, best bid. And I'm giving
I'm
you an example.
I'm telling you that in instances where a contractor is proven to be a law violator or has a record of doing work that doesn't meet a particular standard of quality, they don't have to be hired even if they are the lowest bid.
Well, here's what happens. If you're the lowest and you give the bid to the second lowest, a lot of times the lowest will go to the public entity and say, you know, I'm the lowest. You got to give it to the lowest, and I'm going to sue you. So a lot of times the public entity says, I don't want to go through this court process. I don't want to have to fight and prove that the second lowest bidder was more qualified than the lowest bidder. I got to get this project done, so I'm going to go with the lowest bidder. That's reality. That's what happens constantly. Let's go with the lowest bidder. So what I'm trying to tell you is the issue dealing with prevailing wage, setting the wage rates, making sure they're paying their unemployment, their workers' comp, their state income taxes, all their other issues, and following the rules, that's why we need this. And
I'm trying to give you the positive ramifications of a disaster area down in Joplin. Right.
Now, part of your debate
I'm
is...
I'm just telling you that they don't have to hire that contractor. If that contractor has a record of violating the law and not abiding by the law, that contractor, even though it's the lowest bid, that entity that's hiring the work done does not have to hire that worker. In fact, I think they can disqualify that contractor's bid and just throw it out entirely.
That's great. Okay. That's in a perfect world. Okay. Can I explain to you one more time, in an imperfect world, how it really happens? And why am I bringing this up as part of your deal? Bill deals with eliminating prevailing wage from disaster area projects. That's why I'm bringing up the Joplin area and bringing up this issue where the Department of Labor talked to us, and since all of our colleagues weren't at that meeting, I'd like to let them know some of the positive things this department has done to help, and why we shouldn't take that out. That all happened
with the prevailing wage being put in place.
Bingo. You're on my side now.
Right.
Let's move on.
You're complaining about it being waived or thrown out in instances of natural disasters. And I'm just saying that it happened with the prevailing wage law in place.
You're on my side. Let's lay the bill over. Let's move on. Let's do some more productive things like a nuclear power plant that's a $6 billion investment in the state of Missouri. Or let's get on the floor and talk about
possible toll roads. Maybe Indiana passed it, and they've got three major companies going to come to Indiana and set up shop in the state. 31 other companies are making inquiries to the state of Indiana since they've passed the right to work law.
Wow, that's great. And I just seen we have two big expansions, $1.2 billion from Ford and over $360 million from GM to redo the car. And some of it's from us giving them some of the tax credits that every other state gives, but those other states gave a lot more than ours.
What about all those car companies that Greg Steinhoff went and tried to recruit
from
Missouri, and they said, hey, we love Missouri, but it's not a right-to-work state, so we're going to take our auto manufacturing plant somewhere else. What happens, Missouri had about six or seven auto manufacturer plants. Now we're down to two for the last 10 years.
Can I get my right-to-work box up here, too, if we're going to go down that route?
We're not going there.
Because I got that box down there, too. I have so many boxes when I leave my office that I think out of respect to
you. And you're winning, Senator.
I'm going to give you my right-to-work box in my prevailing wage box so that you can set that in your future office to remind you how lucky you are you don't have to work with me anymore, okay? And when you really get bored in your old
age, I want to tell you what, I've enjoyed working with you because you're a fiscal conservative and you've been a very astute senator when it comes to budgeting and on so many other issues. We just have a couple little small things we don't agree on.
Yeah, and let's just put them aside and let the future deal with it, Senator. Let's not do this. But getting back to the Joplin area, And why I'm bringing this issue up is that's part of your bill, and one of the issues that was brought to us in one of the meetings was Joplin. So I'm just going to read the research I got on it and share it with everyone as part of my inquiry.
And you know, Senator, I'm not trying to do away with the prevailing wage law, that there's 18 states that don't have a prevailing wage law.
You are in disaster.
I'm not trying to do away with it.
In disaster.
I'm trying to work with you.
Yeah. That's why I can't keep my back totally to you.
Senator, but, I'm not going to show you the corn, slip you the cob today, okay?
Senator, you've been doing that to me the last 8 years.
not really. You've won every time.
No, there's
except
one
for
you
one
did
little
back
little bill,
in.
No, you guys have circumvented that.
Senator, we sat in good faith with you and we came up to an agreement, but you snuck in, I think in 2005, a 3-year statute of limitations on violations.
That was
the
late
representative. That was a little cob there to me, wasn't it?
Well, now, that was not my dealings. That came over from the House, and I was not aware of that one.
Senator, I was born at night, okay? Not last night. Let's go through this letter
okay.
So we can share with the body everything, some of the things that was shared with us. And the senator from Jasper's here, so this is something I was going to bring to his attention as well when I inquire of him. On November 9, 2011, Labor Standards met with representatives of the Joplin schools to proactively assist the city in recovery. During the meeting, the school district expressed concern with two contractors, Urban Metro Development and Jordan Disposal. The Division of Labor Standards agreed to review certified payrolls submitted by the contractors to the public body and ensure compliance to the Missouri prevailing wage law. Department of Labor Standards found no issues with Jordan Disposal's records. During the review of Urban Metro Development records, the Division of Labor Standards noted issues of employees being reported as 1099 contractors. So they were being reported as individual contractors, and basically contractors will do that so they don't have to pay unemployment or workers' comp benefits or the taxes. They're kind of just paid as a subcontractor and just get a set amount of money. The Department of Labor Standards educated, let me get where I was here, I'm sorry. Department of Labor Standards educated the contractor and requested restitution checks. As of today's date, they have yet to come in compliance to that request. Upon request of revised certified payroll to reflect the appropriate wage rates, the department requested copies of canceled checks to support the rates. Copies of the checks provided by the contractor contradicted those provided by Bank of America. Those contradictions reflect willful violations of the prevailing wage. The issue has been discussed with the Jasper County prosecutor, who is interested in pursuing 26 felony charges identified. The Division of Labor Standards has also worked with Employment Security regarding the employees of Urban Metro Development. Urban Metro Development claimed the employees were basically independent employees, therefore not subject to Missouri's unemployment or workers' comp. However, upon checking, Employment Security found employees were not registered as independent contractors either. Urban Metro Developers has begun paying employment and workers' comp when they haven't. Division of Labor Standards has been in contact with the U.S. Department OIG of the labor group who is assisting them in the investigation of federal laws. So here you have an out-of-town contractor that won the bid because they were the lowest bidder, beat out local contractors, and they're not abiding by state law. So basically with Labor Standards going in and helping, I bet you the next contract let by either the school district or some of Jasper County might go to the local guy, even though he's not the lowest, because the lowest has been proven they're violating wage laws. So this is an economic development tool, as I have said in past, and why in a disaster area we would not want to eliminate it. That's why I brought that discussion into that as part of your bill. As well.
So let me understand your point, Senator. You're saying that if we didn't have the prevailing wage law, in disaster areas such as Joplin, you're saying what happens?
Well, you won't have anybody researching the wage rates being paid and then verifying if that contractor is violating other state laws, basically the unemployment workers' comp. I guess those departments could be called, but they all wonder, work under the same Department of Labor.
But now you just told me that the violations took place and the prevailing wage law was in effect here in Missouri. And still,
and they're enforcing
it happened, right?
Yes, and they're enforcing it. And what I'm trying to say with that is not just the violation of the prevailing wage law, but there's violations of employment security and workers' comp that when you have employees, especially in the construction arena, you have to pay those percentages of wages to the employment security and to the workers' comp. And that a contractor from Georgia is able to underbid a contractor from Jasper because they're not following. So then you get the department to come down and assist a school district that is used to running schools of how to oversee and make sure wages are being paid so that local contractors can compete and get some of this work down in this devastated area.
I see your point now, but I'm saying that...
Wait a minute. You understand my point?
Yeah, I do understand.
What am I doing right?
Pardon?
What am I doing right?
I couldn't understand you.
What am I doing correctly if you're understanding my point?
I mean, you're doing a very good job, Senator. But what I'm... My rebuttal is this. My rebuttal is this. The department can still take care of violations dealing with unemployment insurance, with other laws that are violated, even if you don't have a prevailing wage scale. You know what I mean? They're over there not just taking care of violations to the prevailing wage law, but they're also taking care of violations where people don't pay unemployment insurance, where people don't pay Social Security. They can continue to do that, and people can report that, and they can monitor that without having a prevailing wage law.
Okay, what I'm trying to say, though,
but I'm not trying
is
to, go ahead.
The local contractor got beat out by somebody, and then because we have the prevailing wage law and misclassification law, that the Department of Labor Standards goes down there and makes sure and sees that these independent contractors that have this 1099 are in violation.
Yes.
So that law has assisted the people that are doing the public works
right down
there.
I see that, but I'm just saying that even if you didn't have a prevailing wage law, I'm not saying you do away with the Department of Labor or do away with labor standards. I'm saying they still would be there to take care of other violations.
Okay.
You know what I'm saying?
Yeah, but I'm trying to say you shouldn't eliminate this wage law in a devastated area. That was one of my arguments against that portion of the bill. In the other portion of my argument on that issue is how can you try to lower wages in a devastated area, because the only way you're going to help build that area back is by giving people in the area and the people outside of the area that come in because there's so much construction work wages. Those people earn those wages. They then go and spend money in the evening, who knows, at a bowling alley to get a little relaxation after seven hard days of 12-hour days on the job. Or maybe to sit at the local tap in the bowling alley to make sure that they're purchasing and getting the local economy going. So, or they might start purchasing cars, used cars in the area to get around because maybe, or they're going to be purchasing rental units or for motel rooms. So, you're creating purchasing power to help an economy as well. And we both can agree the first thing a devastated area such as Joplin wants is to rebuild its economy. How do you rebuild it? Is give the people in the community the purchasing power to help these businesses that are gone or are struggling because so much has been devastated to get going. So you got restaurants. Because you have purchasing power, you've just got to continue to create purchasing power. So
I agree with you. I'm just saying that they shouldn't have to pay three times what the normal wage rate is.
Well, I have that in my file folder, too, when we go to But Ginsburg County, how much those wage rates are.
You know,
maybe we need to look at that real quick.
But I just that's all I'm asking, Senator, is that, you know, as taxpayers, that we don't forget the taxpayers in Missouri, that we respect their hard work and the submission of their taxes, and so that when projects are being built, their local municipalities or counties don't have to pay three times what normally the rate would be. There's been instances where there's been people working across the street on a private job have made a certain amount of pay, and then you walk across the street on a public works job, and the same workers doing the same job are making three times what they make on the private job. And, you know, Senator, I've worked for myself. I've worked for other people. I remember when I first started working out on the farm and at the radio station there at Dexter, I made $1.50 an hour. And, you know...
Well, you had me beat. When I started working on the farm, I made $1.25 an hour.
You worked on the farm?
Yeah.
I didn't know that.
Yeah, picking tomatoes.
Really?
Yeah. My middle name, I just never wanted to be on the Agriculture Committee, so I didn't share that with too many people, especially the senator from the 11th, because I don't think I could sit through some of those committee hearings. But, yes, I worked on a farm for 3 years.
Would you want to take his place on the Ag Committee, the senator from the 11th?
No, I've done 24 years of not being on the Ag Committee. I'm going to continue that.
He's been a big proponent of rice.
I think I helped you 1 year on one of your issues with rice when Northwest Missouri was attacking you. And I stood up for my colleagues from Southeast Missouri. Do you remember that? I do. Do you remember I stood up for the colleagues in Southeast Missouri against my colleagues in Northwest Missouri?
That's what
because
you
there
did,
was a
Senator.
Rice issue.
You did. And you remember I stood up for you when... There was an institution there in your district that needed a new building, and you asked for, what was it, $9, $10, $12 million to rebuild.
I got eight.
And if you remember, I was vice chairman of appropriations, and I supported that. Do you remember that?
Yeah, but you were helpful.
Pardon?
But you were helpful. But you also share the passion I do for those with developmentally disabilities.
You're exactly right.
So
exactly
I kind of had you at kind of... When you say, can you help me to a colleague, I kind of had you at can, because you and even the senator from Cape, we all kind of, and the senator from Saline, we all kind of have the sympathy when it comes to those individuals. And I think that's one thing I've shared with my Southeast Missouri contingent as
you
well.
You do, and I appreciate your stance on that, Senator. Let me tell you, let's make a deal. You remember the guy,
Monty
Hall?
Let's make a deal.
Let's make a deal. I'll tell you what I do.
What are you going
to
do?
I'll try to work to deal with this prevailing wage thing. If you'll just let the 25th Senatorial District become a right-to-work region, if you'll do that, and we make those seven counties that I represent down there in Southeast Missouri a right-to-work region, because I've got Tennessee to my east and Arkansas to my south that are just tearing me up, tearing our region up. And Jonesboro, Arkansas, and Paragould, Arkansas are booming and growing. And if you would just allow us the ability to compete with those two states and implement a right-to-work law, you know, I probably would have a different approach on this bill.
Could I put a little caveat on let's make a deal?
Yes.
Could you let come to the floor the nuclear power plant debate so that we could get a lot of construction work going
Senator,
on in the state?
Senator, I have been open... for that ESP bill, and the senator from Cape Girardeau has worked on that, and we actually, as you remember, came to an agreement last year on that piece of legislation.
Well, I'm ready to start.
Both parties did.
And three senators on the floor. The senator from Cape Girardeau, what purpose do you rise?
Thank you, Mr. President. I would request unanimous consent for introduction of special guests.
Seeing no objection, proceed.
Thank you, Mr. President. Just entering the gallery and sitting down, we've got a great group of 7th and 8th graders from Emmanuel Lutheran School in Perryville, Missouri. They got up early, I think one of them said at 6 a.m. this morning, drove all the way up here on the bus, and are getting to see the Senate chamber. They just came from the House. Speaker Tilley and I got our picture taken with them. They're off to lunch after they get to see the Senate debate this prevailing wage. The speaker's getting the pizza this time, so it'll probably be boring. And the type of pizza that they get, if I would have got it, you know, we're looking at a crossblend between corn and pea soup pizza. So that'll probably be the next thing that we'll try. But I hope my colleagues would help welcome the 7th and 8th graders from Emmanuel Lutheran.
The guests from the Senator from Cape Girardeau, please rise, and would the Missouri State Senate make them feel welcome. Senator from the 13th.
Continue my inquiry.
Please continue.
I would be all for that ESP. You know, there's a few little details that have to be worked out. And
well, I would have preferred we started right where we left off the last day of session. I just hope Mr. President and the Chair knows how passionate I am, and I'm trying to work as I try to finish out this issue. I'm working it. But on the...
Where were we, Senator?
You know, I think where I was...
We're going to make a deal.
Yeah, nuclear power.
So you want the ESP...
I want nuclear power.
But, you know, that doesn't
power.
Necessarily mean that we get a nuclear power plant just because we give...
Well, then maybe in 7 years from now we'll cut this deal.
It's a first step.
7 years from now we'll cut this deal, I guess. I'm willing to sit down and work with you, but the issue I'm really willing to sit down and work is on the getting the wage survey process working. Now, I got other things I'm going to talk about, and this is going to be said throughout, but let's put things out on the table. You got three steps to get this process completed. And you go to the veto, and if the government vetoes it, you need 109 in the House to override, and you need 23.
Did you talk to the governor? I haven't talked
to him. He did a pretty passionate speech on it yesterday in the front of the Capitol.
The governor gave a speech on what?
Prevailing wage was one of the issues in disaster areas.
What did he say?
I don't have his text, but it was pretty positive on prevailing wage. So, and
I mean, he indicated that any piece of legislation that we'd pass, he'd veto? Or
His speech was pretty passionate that this repeal prevailing wage and lower
wage
rates.
We're not going to repeal the prevailing wage.
Well, you're lowering the avenue, but I'm trying to be realistic in coming up.
I'm not going to be like 18 other states here in the nation and repeal it. I just want to reform it, revise it.
I'll tell you, I have that staff
so
downstairs.
More accurately reflects.
They send me up a note, do you want your right to work box? I don't think I have any more room, do I?
You're pretty stacked up.
Okay. Let's go to the wages.
You like the mode method of statistical analysis, don't you?
Yeah, and I sincerely would like.
But I mean, think about it, Senator. You could submit 10 hours at a particular wage, or say more than that, 50 hours at a particular wage amount, and then there could be hundreds of hours submitted at a variety of different wages, and all that just gets thrown out, just disregarded.
In 70% of the instances, those 50 hours determine the wage rate.
I mean, 70% of the instances, there's not any statistics or wages submitted.
And that's what I'm trying to say. This benefits all entities, public body entities, and if you're using the signatory to non-signatory contractor entities, this benefits non-signatory entities because it brings their wage rate in play. So seriously discussing the issue of prevailing wage and those wage rates could be dealt with if we seriously sat down and talked about trying to instigate a policy like that one contractor group said of getting more wage rates submitted. Now, one of your issues in your piece of legislation as well is coming up with a different survey measure too, which you might think is accurate, but I do not. In voluntary submission probably isn't the most accurate as well.
Well, I think,
but
Senator,
I
when you look at the Bureau of Labor Statistics, those wage amounts will more accurately reflect what's actually taking place in counties. And when you look at the Missouri Quality Jobs Act, the, you know, we have a law in place that says that for incentives to kick in to companies that want to come to Missouri or create more jobs, they have to pay the average county wage and pay 50% of benefits such as health insurance. When you look at what the Department of Economic Development uses for that program and look at the Bureau of Labor Statistics data and wages, they're pretty similar.
I need a pen.
Very, very similar.
I think it's a little too simple. I'm still talking, Senator, but I have this amendment.
No, I understand. So. And you know what I'm saying? And my concern is for the taxpayer of Missouri. I want them to get the most for their dollars.
Senator, you have been cordial and polite in this debate, and I've tried to keep it that way. So
Senator.
I'm going to introduce an
amendment. I thought I still had the floor, didn't I?
No, it was my inquiry.
I thought I was just open for questions.
Oh, you have the floor. I believe the inquiry is of mine, Senator.
Okay, all right. Thank you, Senator. I'll yield.
Okay, thank you.
Mr. President. Senator from the 13th.
I have an amendment.
Please send the amendment forward. Has the amendment been distributed?
Not been distributed. I will not close until it has been distributed, so I request that it be distributed.
You're requesting a waiver of the reading?
Yes.
Senator from the 13th, would you like to explain your amendment?
Well, here's what my amendment does so everybody knows. And I am trying to sincerely try to get us an issue we can deal with. Effective January 1st, 2014, this amendment requires contractors and subcontractors to participate in wage surveys in order to construct public buildings for the Missouri State Highways and Transportation Commission, or sign an affidavit attesting to the fact that they did no work for the commission. Similarly, this amendment requires contractors to participate in wage surveys with the exception of those relating to residential construction in order to construct public works for public body apart from the Missouri Highway and Transportation Committee, or again, if they're bidden and they did not do any work, they do not have to submit just an affidavit that they did not do any work to try to entice contractors to participate in the process.
Are you moving for that amendment's adoption, Senator?
For the adoption of that amendment.
11th. What purpose do you rise?
I inquire of the Senator from 13th.
Senator from the 13th, do you yield?
Yes.
He does. Proceed.
Thank you, Mr. President. Senator, I wanted for the body's benefit. I thought that was a good discussion you had with the senator from Stoddard. To his credit, he has had meetings about this issue that some of our colleagues have been through, you and I believe the senator from Jefferson, as well as the senator from Stoddard and others, have been at almost every one. Some have come to some meetings and whatever, and heard some of the discussion. In that discussion, almost everyone in the room, and I don't want to be inaccurate, and I wanted to give the senator from Stoddard a break because he was up for a while. And I couldn't tell from last week. I didn't know if he was filibustering this bill. I couldn't tell from right before break when they talked about it for 2 hours. But anyway, in that discussion, almost all the contractors, except for one, identified that if there's any flaw in the system, and you say, some people say there's not, it's not broken, blah, 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 but if there's some flaw in the system, that the way that would reasonably, fairly solve that would be to have everyone report, all contractors report. If you remember when this bill came up, so I want the body to understand what's in front of us. At its simplest, this is a debate that really is between two special interests in construction. Okay? Now, what is often misstated, by the way, is that this is somehow a union, non-union issue. As you well know, there are non-union contractors who are advocates of paying prevailing wage and don't want the prevailing wage law to go away.
That is accurate.
Yeah. There are contractor associations, I believe, and I don't want to misstate anything, but some NECA, which are the electrical contractors, some other contractor groups are umbrella organizations that advocate for the industry that have union and non-union membership, but they agree that they don't want prevailing wage to go away because they recognize that they need to get a building done on time, under budget, and they know that you're not going to do that by paying somebody $10 an hour. It's actually cheaper to bring in somebody who knows what they're doing rather than have somebody guess at how to make a Boilermaker. And so I want to just tell the body, the bill in front of us is not really reflective of the discussion that we've been having for the last 3 weeks. And to be fair in that discussion, most of the contractors, except for one, have spoken favorably about mandatory reporting as the solution to whatever perceived problems there are. And I believe the contractor that I have brought from Kansas City, who happens to be not a member of my political party, but is a contractor that happens to be union, although his association has non-union contractors, has said, and if you remember when this bill first came to committee, I believe it was the senator from CAPE, asked this gentleman, his name's Joe Privatera, well, what if this lowers the wage? And Joe Privatera's response was, well, that might happen. It may not happen. But it'll be a fair reflection that we're playing on a level playing field. So I want the body to know that we've heard a lot of discussion today about, you know, we've sent people with deerstalker caps over and meerschaum pipes over to the Department of Labor saying, aha. Most of the contractors in the room that we've been in say, look, I'm sure advocates of the union side try to do this. I'm sure under Governor Blunt and his Department of Labor that the lot of the non-union side tried to do this. And as you well know, prevailing wage for, given the political tides of the state of Missouri, is often not enforced or enforced more or sometimes ignored, depending on that thing. The solution to all of that is to create an even playing field where everyone reports. What's the advantage to those people who've had a disaster area, whether they're the senator from Jasper or the senator from Nottoway, on levees and flooding damage? The advantage is that you've made everyone equal, and also you've empowered cities and school districts to not allow contractors from out of state, storm chasers, who come from Arkansas, Oklahoma, other states, and penalize your local contractors, whether they be union or non-union. And the way you get at that is exactly, and we were talking about a lot of emails. Well, I have an email. It's from, and I'm not big on saying people's name on the floor, but I'll be happy to give people a copy of this. This is from the administrative assistant to the Joplin Schools Operations Center building. And she had an interaction with the Department of Labor because in the case that you brought up, as you well know, the classic storm-chasing contractor came in and left them hanging. And there's all sorts of, the taxpayers are now, after surviving a horrific disaster that this legislature wants to do to address in whatever way we can in rebuilding Joplin. Yes.
Three senators on the floor. Senator from the second, for what purpose do you rise?
Thank you, Mr. President. I would seek unanimous consent to introduce some special guests.
Seeing no objection, please proceed.
Thank you very much, Mr. President, and thank you for yielding, gentlemen. I wanted to introduce a group of fine Missourians up behind me in the upper gallery. We have 110 students from the fourth grade class of Prairie View Elementary School from Wentzville, Missouri, in St. Charles County. They're up learning about government, so if my colleagues would please welcome them, we're glad you guys came up and visited.
Would the guests from the Senator of the Second please rise and be recognized by the Missouri State Senate. Senator from Johnson.
Oh, yes. Thank you. With unanimous consent, I would like to also introduce a special guest.
Seeing no objection.
Thank you,
proceed.
Mr. President. We have the hardworking recorder of deeds from Johnson County, a chicken farmer and recorder of deeds, Jan Jones.
Will the guest from the Senator Johnson please rise? Missouri Senate, feel recognized. Senator from the 24th.
And I, too, seek unanimous consent to introduce some special guests.
Seeing no objection, proceed.
Today at the Capitol, I've got members from my community here representing the Child Advocacy Day, and I'd like them to be standing to be recognized by the
Senate.
Would
the guests of the Senate of the 24th please rise, and would the Missouri State Senate please welcome them. Senator from the 11th.
If I might continue my inquiry of the Senator from the 13th.
Proceed.
Thank you, Mr. President. So, Senator, what I'm getting to, so the body, if some of them are listening, I hope some of them are listening, I'm not saying that there's any agreement by the senators that are there, but I'm just saying in the discussions we've had, and by the way, the one contractor that was, quote-unquote, against mandatory reporting said, well, I could go along with mandatory reporting if you change the mode method. Now, I want the body to know that all the other contractor groups, some of them non-union, some of them union, think that's a terrible idea. And I'll tell you why in the senator from the senator from Stoddard. Marion, he's not from Marion County. Anyway, the senator from Stoddard, in his underlying bill, the reason it's a bad idea to go to that average is the way that the system he wants to use, he doesn't want to take the average, as you know, of all the electricians that do that work. He wants to use this federal system or this occupational statistics that take the person that works at Quick Trip and combines them with a state legislator and combines them with a lawyer and combine. And you heard this discussion before break. People were talking about how an average made sense. So let's take a doctor, a lawyer, and a janitor and come up with an average wage. That makes absolutely no sense. Every contractor group in that room, except for one, said that was a terrible idea. And by the way, let me get back to before we got to the introduction of guests, and I misspoke and talked about the senator from Marion County, which wasn't his. Anyway, the person with the Joplin Schools Operations Center. Okay, they have a dispute now over a demolition contract because in the classic setting, they didn't really have, you know, all this stuff and all these things to protections, blah, 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 blah. They have a lot of stuff to build. So guess what they asked the Department of Labor to get from the contractor? Copies of canceled checks in the payroll. All certified payrolls, copies of canceled check for payroll 5A, 5B for Old South Project, copies of all certified payrolls. What this person who works for the school system in Joplin is confirming our meeting with the people who actually do this. They're saying, look at this stuff, give, you know, make contractors come forward with this so some community that has gone through a horrific disaster doesn't have to guess. Because, yeah, the senator from Stoddard was absolutely right. The school district of Joplin, the city of Joplin, any community that's faced a flood because of a levee or something like that, yeah, they can sue the people in civil court, and 3.5 years later, they might get a judgment, or they might have to settle it. And guess who pays for all of that? The taxpayers. And I've heard consistently in this whole discussion, oh, it's the taxpayers. Now let's get to that point. You've been in the legislature how long? House and Senate.
22nd year.
27 years.
22nd.
22 years?
Yes, I sat out for 2 years.
Okay. I'm not completely... The other contention that was disputed, and we have, I think you have facts and I have facts, of all these charts, was that somehow these communities are left with paying the St. Louis wage, is the common phraseology, or the Kansas City wage. The yes. concept that somehow a rural county has to pay and their taxpayers have to pay these wages. Senator, the problem with that is, let's go back to the first point that the contractors made in all these meetings. You have mandatory reporting. That protects your taxpayers. It goes back to the initial discussion we had in committee. Yeah, one of the contractor groups said wages might go down if you do that. They might go up, but whatever it'll be a fair reflection based on an even playing field. And for whatever reason, and the point is, I've heard all this discussion about the Department of Labor. As you know, we had our complaints probably about the Department of Labor under the Blunt administration, blah, 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 blah. The protection for all that is to change the statute and direct how these, if when I hear contractors, and you heard the contractors say the same thing, if there's this concern that hours aren't being counted, make them count all hours. And I want the body to know that we're not really, when I go to those meetings, I don't sense that we're at an impasse. We have largely one contractor who doesn't like what all the other contractors say. And I want the body to know that we're not at something where, but what is in this bill now, I want everybody to understand, is not reflective of anything that discussion has come up with. The contractors don't say, hey, it's a really good idea to suspend prevailing wage in a disaster area. All of that language in there, it's a really good idea to do away with the mode method. No one except one contractor is saying that. And on the issue that there was almost total agreement, and I would say almost total agreement, the one person who was, quote, against that was putting a condition, well, I would be for that if you did away with the mode method. And that's one contractor out of, as you know, probably, what, 75% of the construction industry in Missouri is in that room, and their representatives.
I think you make a point, and I hope senators are listening. Some of the senators, Senator from Phelps was in those meetings, but...
And they might not agree. All I'm saying is that's the discussion I've heard. I'm not saying that they as senators agree with everything that's being said, but we have had a room where we've had the construction industry, largely of Missouri, and that is, I believe, a fair representation that if you ask beyond one contractor, they have all said mandatory reporting, that evens the playing field.
This year, early on, the St. Louis AGC, which has both union and non-union contractors, went and met with the senator. I don't think I'll be doing that today if they want to know in my office. Went and talked to the senator from Stoddard and told them their issues with prevailing wage. And so that I kind of reiterate what I talked to the senator from Stoddard about, and you were in those meetings, we did not include anyone from organized labor. We excluded them.
I totally agreed with you because my point was, since we always put this big drama to this debate, as you well know, this now makes my ninth year of standing up on this. I had a respite for about 2.5 years, but I thought I had a respite till the end of my career, but that didn't work out. But 9 years on this issue, and you hear this group, blah, 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 and this group go, da, 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 da. And you just go, wait. And then there's other people involved in the discussion, and you go, I want the people who actually build the buildings to be in the room and discuss their industry. If we have a telecommunications bill, we have the people who provide phone service and cable and whatever in the same room and say, look, you all have your own little turf, but you need to come to some agreement on this.
And we had at that meeting, so everyone knows, probably, I want to say, 14 different people in some fashion, either a individual contractor representing a association of contractors or an association head representing 200 contractors in their association. So it was business talking with business.
Right.
And what you had is two individuals that were against, and like you said, 70-80% of the rest of the contracting industry saying no. This is how we need to go about it. And I think from that stage on, our next meeting was with a group of senators, and it was to narrow down the amount of people, the amount of business people in the room. And we did that, I believe, last week in the back chamber. Once again, the discussion with these contractors was reporting, and as you state, the one contractor group says, we'll do mandatory reporting, you give us average wage. Come on, we need to negotiate. And you didn't have yourself, the senator from Jefferson, the senator from Stoddard had to leave, the senator from Phelps stayed in the room, but you had the business people saying, no, that hurts our business model. And also the contractor from Kansas City that you brought and the contractor from St. Louis that was in that room sat there, and they were talking about their margins of bidding.
Right.
And their margins are 1%.
Right.
That's how competitive the market is. And what they have been trying to explain is this law allows them to keep their business model in place. And then there was that one contractor.
Well, Senator, before you leave that point, part of their business model, and I want to be really, let's have a real frank discussion about this, involves benefits and health care and things like that.
You know, you and I think alike because that's where I was going.
Right.
In our first meeting in the Senate lounge, everyone got up and spoke. I do not know the individual. I don't know who invited him. But it was a tall gentleman. He had sandy, blonde, grayish hair.
Right.
And he stood up from an association in Kansas City, and he said, I'm getting tired of dealing with this issue. I'm an employer that provides health benefits, and because I provide those health benefits, my employees do not cost the state anything. I provide a pension so that my employees can afford to retire. And he says, and I sit here and I provide my own training. Now, when it comes to training, that is not part of the prevailing wage. So I'm paying more in wages and benefits than the actual wage rate that I submit. And I challenge, why is a contractor that provides these benefits in a savings to the state, because the state doesn't have to pay into a trade school, the state doesn't have to pay into social services, the state doesn't have to subsidize more on indigent care coming in the emergency room. Why should I, as a contractor, continue to be subject to, he pretty much put, harassment of this issue? Why shouldn't contractors that are willing to pay, that do not get to report all their wage rates on these surveys and still have to compete at a 1% margin, have to keep coming up here and defending this law?
Well,
I don't understand why there's not more of our colleagues on the other side of the aisle. You had the one from the mechanical contractors get up and say, I'm a Republican. I'm a businessman. Why am I having to defend this law? I'm like, well, then help me. Start educating some of the colleagues about this business plan and take away the issue of the union, non-union, signatory, non-signatory, and listen to the business community on this issue. I mean, it's like talking to a brick wall on this issue. Not one of these issues that's in this Senate committee substitute was what a majority of these contractors were stating in those meetings.
And those contractors, I want the body to know, the contractors were not all union contractors.
There is a myth out there
that is, this is a union, non-union dispute. No, this is probably, at some level, a big contractor versus small contractor, just like we run into telecommunications or anything else. Oh, what a shock. In this building, we're running into a dispute between two special interests, and one want, you know, whatever. We deal with that every day. And so what I want to get to, though, is I don't want to do away with something or suspend something or repeal something or briefly suspend it for 5 years that allows out-of-state contractors who we've already seen evidence, victimize people who've been through a horrific tragedy. That's already happened. You have a person from the Joplin School saying, what do we do now? And what does the department say? Well, you better get all those certified payrolls. You know what would have been great? If they had it to do over again, I'm sure they would have wanted those certified payrolls as part of the bid specs. And it might have been good that their state legislature, listening to the people who build buildings in this state, actually made that a requirement, maybe. And that I want the body to know, that's the issue. if members of this Senate have heard that there's some impasse in all this, do we have an agreement? No. But I will just tell you, largely, that's my characterization. I'm not saying that the senators that were there agreed with the discussion, but that's been a lot of the direction of the discussion. Now, regardless of what you think about the Department of Labor, I think more importantly, I try to listen to the people who are in this business every day, because I'm not. And I want the body to know, once again, the people who are there are not just the union contractors. A lot of these organizations have non-union members that do not, non-union members as contractors and subcontractors who do not want to lose prevailing wage for precisely the reason I just said. And the consequences publicly, from a public policy standpoint, to us is you've got already a low-wage area. I mean, that's one of the things that why we try to have these economic incentives. You know, the senator from Stoddard, when you briefly went to the right-to-work discussion, wanted a region that could be right-to-work. Well, the problem is a lot of the advocates of right-to-work, they forget about the ka-ching, ka-ching part. You remember the ka-ching, ka-ching part?
Oh, it's all about
that all these southern states dumped $500 million up front. And guess what a lot of that money from the state comes from in those other states? Job training, pensions, and defining what is a good job. And that's paid for by the taxpayers. That's part of the incentive package. Or just paid a different set of taxes. But that's the discussion. And we need to really, before we suspend prevailing wage somewhere or change the calculation where it becomes an average to where we're taking the clerk at a store and combining their wages with a doctor, lawyer, and boilermaker, that's pretty dumb. You know who does that? What a surprise, the federal government. It's part of the census. So once again, we're for all these declarations about how horrible federalism is, we once again we're adopting the system they use. And guess what? It doesn't work. And nor would it be accurate of that. So, I wanted the body to know that's the discussion. Now, you know, there's been a lot of discussion about this bill and da da da. I think you raise a good point. I have no idea what the governor of the state of Missouri is going to do. I would just guess, and I have said this consistently, this is just a guess on my part, that you'd better deal with a pretty basic, fair issue. If you just decide, well, we're going to do this, and you're playing political tag, first of all, I don't know how successful that's going to be over there. And secondly, I don't know that you make it become a law. Now, if people are interested in actually fixing a problem here, that is sometimes a different discussion than what we do. I am not being critical of the majority leader of the floor leader of the Senate, or even the president pro tem, but I would offer under modest criticism, within the last month, we went through a lot of things on at will and workers' comp that, in my view, I don't know what we accomplished, except we identified and confirmed some members of this body's guess as to what might happen. I am not going to purport to say, I told you so, but I might be tempted to do that. And I'm just saying, look, everybody talks about time and all this, and we don't want to waste our time and all that. You know, we just spent time on it. Well, I don't want to revisit that again, but we submit exactly the same language from the year before, da da da. I'm saying let's get to this issue. If there is a genuine problem with prevailing wage, you've heard the people who build the buildings say the solution. That appears not to just favor them, that appears to equally would impact everybody, but it would be done fairly. Senator, you've been up for a while. You've got an amendment. I would like to inquire of the senator from Jefferson, but I'll let you. I haven't done that yet.
Steve, it's your inquiry of me. So
I know, but I'm just saying if you had something to say, I didn't want to preclude you.
Well, no, just to reiterate, and you can inquire of him, is there's the one issue that I've been thinking about, and you talked about the employment at will, discrimination in the workers' comp bill, and direction from the governor. And I sit there, and sometimes they say we do not know what direction. I'm going to bring to closure one thing that I can sometimes understand how the governor plans is leading. We left here last year and got called back into special session. Now, the governor said he would work with the St. Louis Regional Chamber and the State Chamber on an economic development issue. Now, the leaders in the House and Senate, even though the issue pertained to part of my district and I was not contacted, flew around the state and said, we got a deal. And 2 days later, the governor says, you got something that'll create jobs. I'll call you back in.
Right.
And through that process, when it came to the Senate, I remember coming up the steps one day and seeing the governor and his chief of staff in the pro tem's office saying, here, work and pass what you can pass, and I'll support that. And then we passed the bill, and that it was different from what was agreed upon. And the governor says, I'll work with you. I can live with that one. Then it went back to the House. The governor says, I can work with your ideas, too. You guys just give me a unified message in policy, and I'll support that. So in all fairness to the governor, and you know, him and I, he doesn't pick up the phone and call me daily. I don't pick up the phone and call him daily. But I'm sitting here trying to think, well, the governor hasn't told us what to do, and the governor hasn't showed this. The governor came with an economic development idea, brought us into special to create economic development for car plants. The legislature couldn't come to terms last year, go to the governor and say, first they do a press round the state saying, this is our new economic development tool. The governor 2 days later says, okay, come into special session and do it. I don't know what they expect out of the governor. When they tell them, bring us into special session, we got a plan for economic development, we'd come out of special session with no plan for economic development. So I can understand sometimes how he has to operate in an environment that we have shown him in this General Assembly. So I wanted to leave at that point,
too. The last point I'd like to make is, regardless of the second floor, it's there. And if on this issue, its relevance is it is part of a process to make something law. If we're going to contemplate all those things.
Three senators on the floor. Senator from Stoddard, for what purpose do you rise?
Mr. President, would you lay this bill over on the informal calendar?
The bill will be laid over on the informal calendar with the pending amendment number one. Senator from the 23rd.
Thank you, Mr. President. Without objection, the Senate will go to the order of business of announcements.
Announcements. Senator from the 23rd. I'm sorry, Senator from Jefferson.
Yes, Mr. President, on behalf of the Senator from the 15th, his Committee on Jobs, Economic Development, and Local Government will meet at the Senate Lounge at noon.
Senator from Stoddard.
Mr. President, would you please refer Senate Committee Substitute for Senate Bill 789 and Senate Substitute for Senate Committee Substitute for Senate Joint Resolution 40 to the Committee on Ways and Means and Fiscal Oversight.
The bill shall be referred. Senator from 23rd.
Thank you, Mr. President. On behalf of the Senator from Johnson, your Committee on Education will meet promptly at 1:30 p.m. in the Senate Lounge.
We're on announcements. Senator from the 23rd.
Thank you, Mr. President. Without objection, the Senate will go to the order of business of reports of standing committees.
Seeing no objection, reports of standing committees. Senator from 23rd.
Thank you, Mr. President. Your Committee on Rules, Joint Rules, Resolutions, and Ethics has a report.
Send a report forward.
Secretary, read the report.
Madam Secretary, please read the report.
Mr. President, your Committee on Rules, Joint Rules, Resolutions, and Ethics, to which was referred Senate Committee Substitute for Senate Bill 671, begs leave to report it has examined the same and finds that the bill has been truly perfected and that the printed copies furnished the senators are correct. Respectfully, Senator Dempsey, Chairman.
Senator from the 23rd.
Thank you, Mr. President. I would like to say good morning to my wife, Molly, who's listening on the Internet this morning. And with that, Mr. President, no further business coming before the body. I move the Senate stand in recess until 3 p.m. this day.
The Senator from the 23rd has moved the Senate stand in recess till 3 p.m. this day. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed, nay. The ayes appear to have it. The ayes do have it. The Senate will stand adjourned.
No. In recess.
The Senate will stand in recess till 3 p.m. this day.